Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So let's go.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of Set Lusting Bruce, your podcast all about Bruce Springsteen, his music, and mostly his fans. I am your host, Jesse Jackson. We are getting off the Bruce train tonight, though I'm sure he will come up, and we are talking baseball. We are talking music, and I am lucky enough to be talking to a DFW icon, Eric Nidell. Welcome to the Set Lusting Bruce.
Thanks for having me, Jesse.
Yeah. So for those of you who may not be from the Dallas area, tell us a little about yourself.
From Brooklyn, New York. I grew up in Brooklyn, and I was a big sports fan from the time I was a little kid and a big music fan from the time I was a little kid. And those have been my two passions pretty much my whole life. And I am fortunate enough to, do what I do for a living, broadcasting baseball games for the World Series champion Rangers. And also to put on some shows, some concerts for nonprofits, and I get to go to a lot of shows. So I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I get to do the two things I love most in the world an unlimited number of times.
Yeah, I remember you were on an interview with Norm or someone, and you said, all I ask is just give me a space on the wall that I can lean against. You don't even have to give me a chair. You can sell that to someone else, but just give me a chance to hear music. Give a little background. Eric and I both were in a small club here in Dallas called Club Dada to see Lily Hyatt Friday night. Neither one of us had seen her before. And I saw him standing near the bar, went up and introduced myself. Being pushy, as I always do, I give my Set Lusting Bruce card and go, hey, I'd love to have you on the podcast. And like the next day, Eric sent an email, okay, when can we do this? So thank you. That was very nice of you to do.
If I don't do it the next day, then I'll probably forget. So
yeah.
To my madness.
Yeah. What'd you think of Lily?
I thought Lily was terrific. And as you said, I'd never seen her before. I'd seen her dad a couple of times and I'd listened to her music regularly. Yeah. I've friends who were big fans of hers. This was the first time I actually wound up in the same place as Lily on a night where I could go. And I thought her show was tremendous. I thought her band was really tight too. I was very impressed. I thought it was terrific.
Yeah, I thought so too. I was the same thing, heard about her through her dad, wanted to just support the brand. But in fact, it was my wife went just because I asked her to go. And 1 minute into the song, her first song, Linda looked over at me and said, okay, anytime she's playing, I'm in, which is always a nice thing. So I always like to go to the beginning, Eric. Talk about, you mentioned growing up in Brooklyn. Tell me, what kind of music was your family listening to? What were you listening to as a youngster?
As a very young child, I was listening to a lot of my mom's favorites, which were Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole, Tony Bennett, Mel Torme, Steve and Edie, and a ton of Broadway show music. Oklahoma, South Pacific, West Side Story, King and I, all of those albums were played regularly in our house. And my sister, who was 3 years older, started expanding the repertoire a little bit as she started listening to rock and roll music. And I remember her bringing home the first Elvis Presley record that we owned. I was probably six, I would guess, and she was nine. And she brought home this 78 RPM, which was about the size of a dinner plate, both in terms of diameter and thickness.
Yeah.
And it had Hound Dog on one side and Don't Be Cruel on the other side. And I was hooked. That record kind of hooked me on rock and roll and hooked me on Elvis. We bought all of Elvis's records after that. We had Jailhouse Rock. And if you just go down the list, we, from that point on, we had them all. We weren't letting any of them go by.
So two things from that story. One, Bruce, in both his autobiography and his Broadway show, talks about seeing Elvis on TV, woke something new to him. The other is, I've been doing this for a few episodes, Eric, and some of the themes I see are siblings. That your sibling, your older sibling, either influences you, or if you're the older sibling, you do the influencing. And sometimes they're actually the younger siblings will rebel. Like my older brother was into rock and roll, so I really got into punk or something back and forth. But I think that's great. And I always picture that Almost Famous scene where he's looking at all the albums his sister left him and that memory. You other mentioned was, go ahead, please.
I was going to say she moved on in the mid 60s to the folk scene in New York, where she would go down to Greenwich Village every weekend with a guitar strapped on her back. And she would come back with albums from Bob Dylan and Joan Baez and all of the folk singers of that era, Tom Paxton and Dave Van Ronk and Phil Oak. And a lot of people like that were, she was probably 14, 15 years old, and I was 11 or 12, and we started really getting into folk music back then.
You mentioned also loving sports, so talk to me a little bit about that. Growing up in Brooklyn, which of the New York teams was your team?
They all were. We loved them all. Baseball was originally at the Brooklyn Dodgers, had not moved to L.A. when I started being taken to games. They were still playing as the Brooklyn Dodgers at Ebbets Field. And then when I was seven, they moved. And that was a horribly traumatic for me. We still had the Yankees after they moved, but I'd already learned to hate the Yankees. They were the arch rivals of the Brooklyn Dodgers. But still, so we went to Yankee games. But I also went to, we had season tickets for the football Giants. When the Jets came in, we started rooting for them too. I went to a lot of New York Knicks games, a lot of New York Rangers games. So I went to all of them. And I played all of the sports too. And that was pretty much my life as a kid, was playing sports and going to sporting events. That was my recreation.
I sent you a few notes before we recorded, and I was going to ask you what came first, your love of sports or love of music. But it sounds like it's a tie, Eric.
Yeah, they both really started as far back as I can remember, in the age 5 and 6 range. My parents specifically taught me to read before I even started school so I could read about the Dodgers, so I could read the box scores in the newspaper, and so I could read the standings and see where the Dodgers were. I learned to read when I was probably four or five, so that I wouldn't have to bug them to read the newspaper to me. So that's about as far back as I remember the sports thing going. And I remember playing catch and playing with a baseball and a glove among my very earliest memories, too. I was probably even younger. I was probably three, I would guess, when my dad and I started throwing the ball around. And music, again, I can remember the show tunes and the Frank Sinatra stuff as far back. I can remember when my parents got a new stereo at one point. I was probably around five, and that was this big noteworthy occasion in our house that we got this, actually they called it a hi-fi. And they got they got the hi-fi with the record player and the radio in the same unit and nice piece of furniture. That was a real big deal in our house.
Did you mention going to a lot of live sports? Did you guys go to shows? Did you guys see Broadway?
We went to Broadway shows. I didn't get to go as much when I was young. I guess they felt it was a waste of money on the ticket that I'd probably be bored and fall asleep. I do remember going to some shows, but my sister, who was 3 years older, would generally get taken to the shows with my parents. And I was often left at home to watch a game on TV with my grandparents.
Nice. Can you remember your first live concert?
Oh, very well. I remember going to Murray the K's Christmas Spectacular at the Brooklyn Fox Theater. Murray the K was a very popular rock and roll disc jockey, and he had a big Christmas show every year, and he would get a bunch of groups. There'd probably be 10 bands, and it was very heavy on Motown. So I remember seeing the Supremes and the Marvelettes and the Chiffons and the Shirelles and the Four Tops. I remember seeing a whole bunch of bands like that. Marvin Gaye, seeing one of those shows when I was probably around 12. And then the first single group concert that I ever saw was the Four Seasons. It was before they were even called Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. They were just called the Four Seasons. And they had a string of hits, Big Girls Don't Cry, Cherry, Walk Like a Man. It was like one number one hit after another. And they were from New Jersey, so they were super popular in the New York area. And we went to see them at an amusement park called Freedom Land. It was an outdoor concert. And I remember my cousins taking me. My cousins, who were old enough to drive, drove us out there. And that was the first single group concert that I ever went to.
So it sounds like you got a very early taste of everything. I talk a lot about, I graduated high school in 77. I was born in 59. So I grew up with an AM clock radio was my window to the musical world. And AM radio back then played a little bit of everything. And my parents were big country and Western fans. So between that core group of that and that, I learned to love everything. Sounds like you had a similar experience.
Yeah, we were mostly rock and rollers on the radio back then in the top 40 days. FM hadn't really come in terms of being a musical source for us. So we were listening to WABC, mostly in New York, with cousin Bruce Morrow doing a countdown once a week and listening to those disc jockeys. And then I was probably in high school when the first FM station that was more of the album-oriented station, WNEW FM, came in, and that kind of lifted the lid on all sorts of expanded music offerings, because they weren't just playing the 45s back then that were the singles. They were playing album cuts. They were playing the folk music, you know, that we were listening to in clubs in Greenwich Village and on the albums. But these weren't artists who put singles out. Peter, Paul, and Mary were one of the groups that were really popular back then on the FM side of the dial. And that was really noteworthy, because when that first FM station came in and was immediately tremendously successful, a whole slew of FM stations followed that were basically copycatting that station.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
You've talked a little bit in interviews, so I won't dwell into this too much, but I feel like I need at least to touch on you very early influenced, and you had a desire to broadcast games a little bit. So talk to me a little bit about that, why you wanted to be that when you grew up, though it sounds like you would have been just as happy being a musician.
Yeah, I didn't have much skill or much talent. I would have been just as happy probably being a disc jockey. I just loved radio. I was a radio junkie, and I would listen to, again, mostly the top 40 station, but not entirely. I would listen to all the personality radio that was so popular back then. And in New York, there was no limit to the number of stations you could listen to. But when I found out, I asked my dad one day, we're in the car, and I asked him how Mel Allen and Red Barber, the Yankee announcers, got off work so they could go to Yankee Stadium this afternoon and do this game. And when he told me that they were at work, that was their job, I told him, my dad was a dentist, I told him, Dad, you're going to go back to the office and you're going to fill some cavities and pull some teeth. And these guys get to go to Yankee Stadium and watch a game and blah, 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 blah about it for a couple of hours. And they're getting paid too. I said, Dad, they have a much better job than you do. That's what I want to do. And I was probably 7 or 8 years old when that happened. And ever since then, that's really what I wanted to do. Again, I would have been okay with being a disc jockey, but as it turned out, I wasn't very good at being a disc jockey when I started doing it in college radio and realized that I wasn't really suited for that. I was much better at actually doing sports where I had a chance to describe things or I could watch something and basically report on it. I was a lot better than coming up with all of the ad libs and stuff that you needed to be a good radio disc jockey.
So I'm going to get back to your time with the Rangers in a little bit, but I want to go back to music for a little bit. Over the years, you've been a very wide selection of music, but are there a few musicians that stand out to you that you continue to hold close to your heart, that you continue to go back to during times you need that extra?
I've probably seen Springsteen more than any other band. I've probably seen Bruce 20 times, I would guess. going back to the late 70s. The other bands who I probably have seen the most before he died, Tom Petty, I saw several times. I've seen James Taylor a bunch of times. I first saw him when I was a freshman in college, and nobody knew who he was. He had just put out his first album, and he was doing a tour of colleges in the Northeast. So he's been ever-present in my life. I'm a huge fan of what I consider to be one of the underrated groups of all time, Bare Naked Ladies. And I've probably seen them 15 times, I bet, in concert. So those are probably the four artists who I've seen the most. Bruce, Tom Petty, Bare Naked Ladies, and James Taylor. I would say those are probably the favorites.
Can you remember when you first discovered Bruce, and what about his music spoke to you, Eric?
Yeah, I first discovered him. I think I read that article in Rolling Stone, the future of rock and roll article, and the John Landau piece. And I think that probably that's how I discovered him. And there were all these comparisons being made to Dylan, and you had to find out what this was all about. And instantly you realized that he was speaking truths, and he was talking to the common man, and he was doing it a little more rock and roll than the other guys who were doing that. It was a little different in style from the other lyricists of that class. And that immediately appealed to me.
What was your first Bruce show? Can you remember?
Oh, would have been probably the tour before Born in the USA.
Okay.
I remember Born in the USA. I remember that one specifically because I actually saw that show in about three different cities. And I flew to LA to see it. And a friend of mine was working at the LA Sports Arena, was working backstage at the LA Sports Arena. And part of her job was to play ping pong with Bruce before he went on stage. And I remember getting backstage passes and getting a chance to see Bruce play ping pong before he went on. And then the seats that she had gotten me, which were really close to the stage, were right next to John Cusack. And that was my brush with greatness, getting to watch a Bruce Springsteen concert with John Cusack. And again, what was that, the early 80s?
He is on my list of people I would love to have on. There's always celebrities you would love to interview with, but all mine are Springsteen fans. So I want to talk about their Springsteen connection. What was the last
time? I'll
tell
you, one of the great things about going to Springsteen shows in the different cities is you'd always see a lot of baseball people there. And for a while, I had this really close contacts with Springsteen's band and his road manager, and we would get these incredible seats. I remember one year in spring training, we drove up from Port Charlotte to Tampa to see him play at the hockey arena in Tampa. And all of these baseball stars, Paul Molitor and a bunch of Yankees, future Hall of Famers, they were sitting like 10 rows behind us. And all of my broadcast friends who I had brought to the show were really impressed that we had better seats than the players. Just for a change, we had the better seats than they did. But I got really lucky. I got to see him in Washington, D.C. I got to see him in Seattle. Obviously, I saw him several times in Dallas. Saw him in L.A. at a few different places. And then the most memorable of the Springsteen shows for me was I got to see him at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
And made a special trip to New York specifically so I could have the experience of Springsteen at Madison Square Garden. And while it was the most memorable Springsteen show I ever saw, and I was like right in the middle of the floor, it wasn't the most enjoyable because the crowd sang every song and you could hardly hear Bruce a lot of the time because the crowd was singing so loud and he wasn't asking them to sing, but they were. So as much as I valued the experience, and I'm glad that I went, I really didn't enjoy it as much as a lot of other shows where you could actually hear Bruce and the band more.
How did you get a connection with Bruce's band?
Again, through this woman I knew who worked at the LA Sports Arena, who ultimately married a concert promoter in LA, who used to do all of Springsteen's shows on the West Coast.
Okay.
And through him, we got to meet the road manager and some of the other people on the crew. And that's how we got hooked up there for about 30 years. We were in good shape anytime there was a Springsteen show.
Did you end up seeing him in Broadway?
We did. My wife won the ticket lottery. I never won it, but she did. So we went up there and sucked it up and paid the $700 or whatever it was for a ticket. And it was money well spent. I loved it.
Yeah. Someone reached out to me because I said I wasn't going. And he said, I can get you a ticket if you want to go. Wow. Okay. And so I went to my wife, and as someone who's, anyone who's been married a long time knows this conversation, because I said, I'm going to ask you something and it's okay for you to say no. Like, there are certain things you can't say no about. She'll say, hey, my sister's coming to spend the night. Do you care? The answer is, I don't care. Whether I care or not, the reality is I don't care, but there's things. I said, in this case, it is okay for you to tell me, no, we have no business spending that much money going to New York. And she said, let's figure out the logistics. And we looked at the airfare, we found everything, and we're like, okay, make it happen. And so I'm always grateful for her that I got that experience of going. When was the last time you saw him?
Oh, it's been a couple of years now.
Okay.
I just missed him in Phoenix last week.
Yeah.
I had an event on the 19th of March, a speaking engagement. And it was after I booked that he announced that he was playing in Phoenix that night.
Yeah.
If I hadn't had that speaking engagement, I would have stayed 2 days longer.
Yeah.
And I would have seen his show this past Tuesday.
Yeah.
And so that was a bitter pill, but I'm sure I'll get another chance somewhere on this tour.
One of my favorite stories is when he was going to be in Dallas in 2016, the River Tour, I was at the House of Blues beforehand, and there were a couple of guys with Irish accents wearing WrestleMania shirts, and WrestleMania had been the weekend before at Jerry World. And they said, you've got a Bruce shirt on and I hear you're talking about it. What's going on? I said, oh, Bruce is playing tonight just down the street. I flew from Ireland to see WrestleMania. My American Airlines ticket is tonight. I have tickets to see him in Ireland. I did not know he was playing. You can call American Airlines and try to throw yourself on the mercy. Yeah. Way back in the day, before there was DVRs and things, I would take a spreadsheet, look at all the different TV shows I wanted to watch, and would figure out a schedule. Currently, and one of our greatest things last fall is my son and I arranging our schedules so that we could watch the Rangers playoff series, right? To make sure that we were there, had nothing conflict. I'm canceling podcasts. I'm rescheduling things. What do you do when you get your Rangers schedule and to get, because I've heard you talk about, you try to see as much music as you can while you're on the road. Talk to me a little bit about that, Eric.
Yeah, I go about a month at a time.
Okay.
So, for example, here we've got April coming up, and we have an afternoon game on a Saturday in Houston. So I go to bands in town, and I look to see what's there that night. But actually, when we're in Houston, before I even do that, I'll go to the Heights Theater website. Mm-hmm. And the Heights Theater is Houston's version of the Kessler. It's owned by the same people.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of the same artists, but it's a little bit bigger. So sometimes an artist will play Houston and not Dallas and vice versa. But I went to the website and immediately saw that on that Saturday, when the Rangers have an afternoon game at 3 o'clock, 10,000 Maniac is playing at the Heights Theater. They're playing at the Kessler a couple of nights before, but I will be flying to Houston at that time and will miss the show in Dallas. And I really want to see them. I know Natalie Merchant's gone, but Lee Nash is now the lead singer. And I'm a huge fan of hers from Kiss Me and the other songs from Sixpence. And I think that I get lucky more often than the odds would predict in running into shows like that. So I'll get a chance to see them in Houston on that Saturday night. And that's really about as far as I've gone in looking at shows. What I do look at very carefully, though, and I'm on the mailing list, is the schedule for Red Rocks. I make sure that every year I go to at least one show at Red Rocks, and ideally multiple shows. We got very lucky this year. We have an off night in Denver in May before a series against the Rockies, and there's a show at Red Rocks on that off night. which is Turnpike Troubadours and Red Clay Strays, two of my favorite bands. And so I lucked into that. And then for the second time in the last few years, I'm going to go in early July and see the Avett Brothers at Red Rock. And that'll be a separate trip where I've got to fly there specifically to go see that show. And Dawes is opening for them. I'm a huge Dawes fan. I've seen them before. And so I'm looking forward to that. So those are my two Red Rock shows as of now. But since I get to take a lot of games off now, I can cherry pick specific shows and do it. The problem with going to shows at Red Rocks is the airport in Denver is about an hour east of Denver, the opposite direction from where Red Rocks is. So to get from the airport to Red Rocks takes between an hour and a half and 2 hours. It's really a commitment, but it's one worth making. Every time I'm at Red Rocks, I'm just euphoric that I'm there and always beating myself up for not going more often. So I imagine before this year is over, I'll probably find a third show there and make my way out there one other time.
Yeah, one of the guys I was talking to at Dada on Friday night, was talking about he had seen Jason Isbell at Red Rocks. And I said, I'm very jealous because I've heard it's an amazing venue. Speaking of, he was playing in Oklahoma City in January, and I did not realize he was opening for the Turnpike Troubadours. I just thought it was a show. So I'd never watched them. So I got this two nights in a row, got to see him do about an hour and then them do it. So that was a little nice. That was a fun double set. That was good.
Yeah, I actually have seen him at Red Rocks a few years ago.
Yeah.
And David Crosby opened for him the show.
Wow.
That I saw. Yeah.
That sounds pretty cool. You mentioned that you're choosing games. So how are you feeling? I know that last season you went through a little bit of a rough spot. So how are you doing, sir?
Yeah, I'm feeling great now. Last year I went through a battle with insomnia, anxiety, depression, and wound up missing the first half of the season. And it was really tough. But fortunately, I was able to get it together and get back to work in time for the last couple of months of the season and the entire postseason. And right now I feel great. I'm really excited about the season starting this week. And I'm ready to go. I've done 13 games in spring training. And I'm excited to get started. It's a whole new world right now. It's an alternate universe where the Rangers are heroes. Everybody's celebrating everything around the Rangers, and I'm just really blessed and privileged and lucky to be a part of it.
It was, as I talked to you in the email, one of the things that really impressed me with Bruce's autobiography is he was very open about his struggle with depression and the idea that people go, you're Bruce Springsteen. How can you be depressed? Which goes to tell you that this is a disease that has nothing to do with status or success. So I am glad you're doing well, and I'm glad you are open about it and shared, because I do think there is a stigma about that.
Still is. Fortunately, it's not as great as it used to be, or I wouldn't have been able to come out as openly as I did. It's a malady of your brain chemistry.
Yes.
And it's outside, in almost every circumstance, it's really outside of your control. Something occurs, there's a mind-body connection, there's no question about that. But sometimes it's more of a physical thing. I've had an extensive workup now from a bio-nutritionist who believes strongly that in my case, and a lot of others, it's the failure to metabolize sugar and carbohydrates properly that leads a lot of people into anxiety and subsequently into depression. And that by managing your diet, if you are prone to those mental illnesses, you can probably prevent recurrences. And I'm hoping he's right, because I'm following his program, and it's not the easiest thing in the world, but it's worth it if it preserves my mental health.
That is great. I told you before that Chuck was nice enough to be on the podcast before last season, and he had said at the very end, I said, there's been a lot of baseball. And he goes, I really have a good feeling about this team. So that was nice to hear. Because of the TV rights and everything, we did not get to see a lot of regular season games. We went to a couple, certainly listened to the radio. So when the first playoff started this past fall, Chris and I, which is my son, said, hopefully we're going to get along enough that we're going to get to know the players. And we did. And so I will share my story, right? My adult son and I are watching, and that game in the World Series, like each time they clinch, you're like, I can't believe this. Okay, let's, what do we do to not break this streak? And with your voice, right? Like you say, it's true. We're World Series. It is, it's just sports, but it's also just, it is really powerful. And I think of the great Mark Holtz and Chuck Morgan and yourself. And a funny story is Mark passed away right around the time as Princess Diana. And I remember a couple of my buddies saying, okay, I don't get why my wife's upset about Princess Diana. But like Mark was in our home every night. That, I mean, it's totally different us being upset about us losing him. If you could just, I know you've probably talked about this a lot, but share how much it meant to you to be along that ride and to feel that, to see that.
Yeah. Working with Mark was just so special. And it really got me to be where I am today. I learned so much about doing baseball. I got this job from being a hockey announcer. And although I had played baseball and listened to it and watched it my whole life and followed it closely, I hadn't broadcast baseball till I got this job. And it wasn't until my fourth year on the job that Mark came along and I got paired with him. And I was able to catch his infectious enthusiasm and appreciate how much personality is a part of this job as a baseball announcer, since you are in people's homes every night. And since it is such a conversational experience, and I'm thankful to him every day. And during the postseason, I literally would think about him every single game, because he never got to do a postseason game. He switched over to TV the year that the Rangers won the division for the first time and got to be in the playoffs. And the TV announcers for the local teams don't get to work in the playoffs. It's all national.
Right.
So he missed out on the opportunity to do playoff games. And every time I get ready for a playoff game, I think about the fact that it should be Holtzy and me doing the game.
Yes.
And how he missed it. And before the very first Ranger playoff game at Yankee Stadium in 96, I called him from a payphone it was before cell phones. I called him from a payphone at Yankee Stadium to let him know that I was thinking about him and that I wished that he was there. But during the whole playoff run, I thought of him often. And every year we've gone to the World Series, at the end of one of the series, I've paid tribute to Mark by either saying, hello, World Series, or hello, American League pennant, or hello, WinCom. The first time the Rangers won a postseason series against Tampa in 2010, I said hello, win column, when the last game ended, just as a tribute to him.
Yeah, I love that. To this day, the ballpark shows that when it's live. Yeah, it seems, and I know it's cliche, but it seems like it's a great group of guys, and they just all found a way to win. It was just such a joyous experience for us. And I do get a kick out of saying that World Series champions, Texas Rangers. And so I'm excited about this season.
Yeah, me too. And one of the other great things about how it all happened last year was that music was such a part of it, that the fact that they were playing Creed became such a thing and became so well known, thanks largely to my partner, Jared, who became aware of it through a conversation with Andrew Heaney. And we started talking about it on the radio. And next thing you knew, they were playing it in the ballpark, and it became the theme music for the Rangers. And the fact that they actually had that all the way through, it was great. I loved the connection. And Creed is coming to play at Dickies in November. And I made sure I got tickets the day they went on sale. I made sure they got tickets. And I also made sure that that date was going to be after this year's World Series. So even if we go all the way again, there's nothing that's stopping us from going.
That is so nice. Eric, there's always regrets, but are there a couple people that you still want to see that are available? Are you still got some artists that you wish
Yeah,
you want to see?
I've still got a bucket list. Stevie Wonder is probably at the top of it. I've
Ooh, that'd
never
be
had a
good.
chance to see him, and he doesn't play very many shows. And when he does, they tend to be in weird places. He plays at racetracks, at festivals for 200,000, and
Yeah.
places where I don't necessarily want to go see a show. I check his website every couple of months to see if there's something that might be worth flying to see. I've never seen the Eagles. I protested because they were the first band that really jacked up the ticket prices. So as a protest, I haven't gone to see them, but now I wish that I had. And I think the next opportunity I get to see them, I probably will. I haven't seen Beyonce. I would love to go see her. I would go see Shakira, a bunch of shows that aren't necessarily right in my wheelhouse, but I'd want the experience of seeing them. I'd go see Taylor Swift. I would go see Lady Gaga. Of all of them, Stevie Wonder's definitely far and away the one that I want to see the most.
We bought tickets. Pink is going to be at the ballpark, and so we're going to go see her. My wife wants to see her, and I'm like, hey, I'm open to it. You've seen Bruce a lot of times. Are there any songs of his that you're chasing? Are there still songs of Bruce that you haven't heard him sing live that you wish you could have?
No, I don't think so. I think he's hit all my favorites at one time or another. The song that really, in the more recent years, it's not really that recent anymore, but the song that really resonated with me at the time, and I wondered if he would perform it live, and he did the next time I saw him, was Girls in Their Summer Clothes. And as we age, that's one that it definitely is. It's crossed my mind a million times is that women look at you differently than they did when you were a young, happening guy, and which I'm certainly not anymore. And so that was one that I was really hoping I'd get to see him do, and I have.
When I first heard it, I was like, gosh, it's his tribute to Brian Wilson. And I loved it. I got to see it once too. It is on my bucket list. I would love to hear it again. I was thrilled when Land of Hope and Dreams was used a couple of, it's been longer than that now, but for the playoffs, right? The baseball was playing that. And
Right.
if I had a choice, I would wish he'd do Land of Hope and Dreams every time I see him live, because that's one of my favorite songs. So what's next for you? What You're back healthy. You've got some shows planned. You're going to hopefully see a very competitive ball team play. What's next for you, Eric? What else? Is there anything on your bucket list that you are still wanting to pursue?
Not really. There are a lot of places in the world I'd like to visit, and I've traveled overseas some, but not extensively. I would love to go to Vietnam, Southeast Asia, see what all that was about since that was my era. You know, I was lucky to get a high draft number in the lottery, so I didn't get drafted. People I know had to go and serve or join the Peace Corps, so they didn't have to go fight a war that we didn't believe in. I'd love to go to Australia and New Zealand. I've been to parts of Europe, but most of Europe I haven't been to. I've been to a lot of places in South America, but there are a lot of countries, Brazil, Colombia, that I haven't been to that I'd love to go to. So most of the bucket list things for me in terms of my life involve travel. As far as professionally, I've pretty much done everything that I wanted to do, with one exception, and it's out of my control. I've never called the final out of a Rangers no-hitter. When Kenny Rogers threw his perfect game, which was the last Ranger no hitter, Mark Holtz was doing the ninth inning. So I got to call 3 innings of the game, but not the 27th out. When Nolan threw his sixth and seventh no hitters, it was the same thing. I have called 3 no hitters against the Rangers, Joe Musgrave and Corey Kluber. And what was the other one? Mark Burley. Yeah, Musgrove, Kluber, and Burley. And I called the near perfect game by Yu Darvish, which Marwin Gonzalez spoiled with 2 outs in the ninth inning. But I've never actually gotten to call the 27th out of a no hitter by a Ranger pitcher. So I'm not going to stick around just for that. But I'd love to get a chance to do that before all is said and done, now that I've actually called a World Series winner. The no hitter pales in comparison, but I'd still like to do it.
That sounds really nice. Any final thoughts before we get to the Mary question? Anything I should have asked you that I haven't, Eric?
No, I don't think so. We didn't really cover the fact that I've never played a musical instrument other than playing a kazoo and a washboard in a jug band when I was in high school. But we had a beautiful piano in our house, and my sister took piano lessons. Again, she was 3 years older. And the piano teacher was adamant about only playing classical music, only playing Beethoven and Bach and Brahms and Tchaikovsky. And we didn't like the music. As kids, we did not like classical music. It was boring to us. And because she wasn't letting us play any of the music we liked, my sister would always try and get out of taking her lessons. She would get out of practicing. And I chose not to take lessons. When I got old enough to take them, I decided they're going to interfere with Little League. They're going to interfere with all the stuff that I like to do. And I'm not going to take them. And now I greatly regret not having learned how to play the piano when we had a beautiful piano sitting in our house. So in terms of the musical world, that's the big regret that I have. The one other thing I should comment on is the link between baseball and musicians. And this is something that constantly blows me away, that there are so many musicians and brilliant singer-songwriters, you know, who I consider to be geniuses, who are just enamored with baseball. And when I meet these people, all they want to talk about is baseball. I'm actually in an email chain that Rhett Miller of the old 97s invited me to join that involves a lot of musicians from a lot of different types of bands. And it's only about baseball. It's a chain of musicians talking about baseball. And it includes a couple of the guys from REM. Jason Isbell is in the chain. I mentioned Rhett Miller. All the guys from a group called the Baseball Project are in it. For people unfamiliar with them, they're actually going to play a show at Tannehill's in July. They're a super group composed of people from different bands that just play songs about baseball. And they've got three albums. So if you're not familiar with them, check them out, the Baseball Project.
I have not. I will do that.
They're all in this email chain. Yeah, it was started by Mike Mills of REM.
Yeah.
And Peter Buck of REM. Mm-hmm. And they've got a great catalog of songs, and they're all in this email chain. And it's hysterical for me to meet these people and see how crazed they are about baseball. Amos Lee is the biggest Philadelphia Phillies fan who I've ever met. Ben Gibbard from Death Cab is a huge Seattle Mariners fan. He even has a song called Go Ichiro that he performs when he does solo shows. And it just blows me away that these people who are such geniuses invest so much emotional energy in baseball. But I guess everybody needs an escape.
Yeah.
And the nature of baseball being a little slower paced, of course, and maybe a little more intellectual / artistic appeals so much to musicians who don't really care about any other sport, but are really into baseball.
Yeah, I'm thinking of, right, the great, late, great Charlie Pride, right, that just loving baseball so much. And I often think when I'm doing an interview, and I've told this story multiple times, I don't remember who Norm was talking to, but Norm says, if you try to talk to Nolan about his no-hitters, you will get rote, pretty boring answers. If you try to talk to him about his home run, he will light up. And yeah. I always think that in mind, that if to try to talk about something that they're not normally asked a lot about, because it gives them a chance to have people go, like, for yourself, oh, we can talk music. That just sounds wonderful. I know I need to let you go, but before I did, I want to talk about, you've taken your love of music and your celebrity and used it to do some different fundraisers. So talk to me a little bit about how that started and brag a little bit about the good you guys have been able to do doing that.
Yeah, it started back in 2011 when I had come across a singer-songwriter named Daphne Willis, whose CD was given to me, and I really loved it. And I looked her up on her website and wrote her a fanboy email. And it turns out she was coming to Dallas to play at the Opening Bell. And I went down to see her at the Opening Bell, and there were maybe eight people there on a weekday night, and she was incredible. And the Kessler had just opened as a concert venue, and I had just met the people who were in charge of it, and I went to talk to them about getting Daphne to play there, and they said, yeah, we can book her to open a show. She can't sell enough tickets to justify making her be the headliner, but she could open a show. So for my birthday that year, I bought out the whole balcony, and Daphne opened a show there, and Kelly Willis was the headliner, who was really popular back then. She still is, but as an Austin singer-songwriter,
yeah,
she was at the top of her game. And it was very successful. Everybody had a great time. And the next day, Daphne and I were going for a walk, and she had a history of mental illness in her family, as I had. And she said, we should do this on an annual basis and make it a fundraiser for a mental health charity. And I said, that's a great idea. And the next year we made it happen, and we've been doing it ever since. And on May 16th this year, we'll have our 12th annual birthday benefit concert, with the proceeds going to the Grant Halliburton Foundation, which is a nonprofit that supplies mental health programs for area schools. And we have an auction associated with it. And Rhett Miller is going to be the headliner this year. Leslie Mendelson, who's a singer-songwriter from New York, who I've become a huge fan of, is going to be the opener. And we do that. That's once a year. And then I also have a concert series that I started at Cafe Momentum, which is the nonprofit restaurant in downtown Dallas that hires kids when they come out of juvenile detention and gives them a one-year internship in the restaurant business. And they wanted to have a once-a-month dinner concert series and asked me if I would put it together for them. We started that in 2017, and that is still going. We've done over 50 shows now, and that's been tremendously satisfying for me. And I've gotten to meet so many great musicians, singer-songwriters, who have come to town specifically to do that show, and that's been really fun for me. The musicians often come, they often stay at our house in our guest room when they come, and we get a chance to hang out with them and get to know them a little bit. And again, I think these people they're geniuses. They can create songs out of nowhere, play the songs, sing the songs, lead a band all at the same time. I have no idea how they do it. They're just human beings like you and me, but I love hanging out with them.
When I got lucky, 87, 88, we went to an early show at Club Dada and saw Sarah Hickman when she was just starting, and got to be friends with Sarah and have remained friends and have gone to, if someone asked what show have you seen the most, I've probably seen Sarah more than anything else. We would see her every Monday night at Dada, Caravan of Dreams, just tons of stuff. And I'm always amazed that just the creativity that they have. I have the same feeling when I go to the ballpark and I watch, how can someone throw a ball that fast and catch it that easily? And the other part is, how can three people that have never played together get up on stage and just after talking a few minutes do, will the circle be unbroken or something? And you're like, it acts like they've rehearsed a dozen times and they just don't. And that is just a special gift. And
no doubt. And it's funny because Sarah has played our show at Cafe Momentum, and so has her daughter, Lily.
Yes.
And
that's another Lily, right? We talked
that's
about
it. Three Lilies, Lily Hyatt, Lily Winwood, and Lily Hickman.
I texted Sarah and I said, I was thinking about that. It is three different second generations. Lily has a new band, Sarah was texting me. So I'm looking forward to hearing them. Yeah. So there's nice. Eric, this is so much fun for you. If you are listening to this because of Eric, thank you so much. I end every podcast with the Mary question. And what that is, a guy named Jay Armstrong was an honors English teacher in the Philadelphia area. We're friends, even though he's an Eagles fan and a Phillies fan. Love of music overcomes all sports rivalries. But when he was teaching, he would give his students the lyrics to Thunder Road, and they would treat it as if it was a poem, Eric. They would read all the lyrics. They would talk about the themes Bruce explores, the imagery, would compare it to Robert Frost and other American poets. And then at the end of the class, he would ask his students, does Mary get in the car? Eric, that is your question. Does Mary get in the car at the end of Thunder Road?
Of course. It's Bruce Springsteen. Yes, of course she gets in the car. How could she not?
Very nice. Any final thoughts, sir?
One other thing that I'd like to point out anytime I'm talking publicly about music is that I think we're incredibly lucky here in Dallas-Fort Worth in that we have the Kessler, which is the best music venue of that size that I've ever been to, with just incredible sound and incredible ambiance. And we now have a radio station in KXT that is as good as any eclectic radio station in the country. And I listen to them all over the country as I travel around. And I've got the KXT app on my phone. And more often than not, I find myself going back to listening to KXT when I'm just hanging out in my room listening to music. And so I wanted to do a shout out for them, for the Kessler, and now the Longhorn Ballroom, which the same people open and is also a phenomenal concert venue. And just be thankful that we have the radio station and the venues that we have here.
Absolutely. I was lucky enough a couple years ago before the pandemic, the night that all his instruments were stolen, that show where solo at Kessler. By the way, you mentioned earlier in the interview about having better seats than some ball players, right? My second Bruce show was that he was in Grand Prairie. This was the Devils and Dust solo tour. And I ended up getting upgraded. The guy came to me and said, "Do you want a better seat?" Yes. And so I said, I didn't have good a seat as Moose Johnston, but I had better seats than Babe Laufenberg. So
Babe is a huge Springsteen fan. Babe never misses a Springsteen show.
I was at a Bruce show there at American Airlines Center. He was getting something to drink. I ran into him. He showed the picture of him and Bruce, like at something, and I bought him the beverage, and we have exchanged emails. I know he wants to be on the podcast. I told him I would love to have him on. I'd love to talk about all the work he's doing in his son's honor. I'm a cancer survivor myself. I do that. But yes, I would love to have Babe on to talk Bruce because, yeah, he adores him. So, yeah, yep. Absolutely. If someone wants to reach you, what's the best way, Eric?
They can reach out to me on Twitter. It's, or X, whatever we're calling it these days, NADELER. Or on Instagram, I am Ranger's Voice. And you can hit me up on either one, and I'll be sure to answer you.
Eric, thank you so much for taking time to do this. This is a joy. I am going to put this out. It's opening day as we're putting this out. I am going All to right. special baseball. So let's hope it should be a national holiday. If that's a, I think whichever side of the party, if they made that work, that would give them a lot of support. Yeah, let's hope that the Rangers have a great season. And I know, win or lose, it's going to be fun listening to you tell the games and the stories. Best of health, my friend. Thank you so much. This is great. Listeners, go check out KTX Radio. If you're in Dallas, any show at the Kessler is a joy. You can't hear a bad band there. It's amazing. And let's go, Rangers. Thank you, Eric. Let's go.
Can you take me higher?
Yes, can we take you higher? Absolutely. Everyone, be safe, be kind, and we'll talk to you soon. Goodbye. Thank you for checking out Set Lusting Bruce. I hope you enjoyed our discussion of music, and I hope you check out other episodes of the podcast as well. I've spent over 7 years talking to hundreds of music fans from around the world about the power and the magic of music. Please follow me on my socials. I am still on Twitter, aka X, as at Jesse Jackson DFW. The show is at Set Lusting Bruce. The show has a Facebook page, and I am still on Facebook as well. I'm part of a few other podcasts. On Perfectly Good Podcast, me and my co-host Sylvan are talking about every John Hiatt song in alphabetical order. My good friend Charles and I talk all things Doctor Who on Next Stop Everywhere. And each week, Lou, Karen, and I talk about Babylon 5 on Last Best Hope for Conversation. And on our JKL Media podcast, we discuss various pop culture topics. I and the show can be reached at setlustingbruce@gmail.com. And it would mean the world to me if you could send feedback on any of the podcasts. Give me your thoughts. Tell me what you like. Tell me what you dislike. Tell me what you want to hear from me. Getting to talk to people about music is a joy, And I hope that these conversations bring you a little joy, a little love, and a whole lot of light.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.